You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora, how are you, Karen?
Very good, Rachel. How are you?
Thank you for coming in this morning. It is very early, I'm sure. And as you're just saying, your body clock is 2 hours behind on Sydney time.
Yeah, you know, in the last 30 seconds, I feel like I just woke up, actually, so I'm good.
That's the power of radio, just like really rocket you into your day. Hey, we're speaking to you because, of course, you are playing tonight in Auckland and you're touring around Aotearoa, but also you've got this fantastic new album out called Return to Centre, and it's a covers album, which is a bold move, and I think it's one that's definitely played off. We've been enjoying it a lot up here at BFM. What sort of prompted, I guess, the idea of making a covers album? And this is also a covers album with a bit of a twist.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't want anyone to know it was a covers album. And I said specifically to my record label, Johnny, don't tell anyone it's a covers album, because they seem to think that it's somehow artistically, potentially less artistically relevant. You know, and people, I don't think people realise that David Bowie's Pinups is a covers album, you know, with Sorrow. Sorrow is a cover. Or Nick Cave, Kicking Against the Pricks. Mm-hmm. It's probably the only Nick Cave album I like. Is a covers album. Anyway, this album is more of a self-portrait, I guess, using other people's songs to paint that picture. And as a music lover more than a songwriter, you know, the songs that have defined my life aren't the songs I've written, but the songs that I've loved.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not to say this is necessarily a list of my favourite songs, it's not. They were sort of a mix of spontaneous decisions and songs I've always wanted to cover that kind of came together to paint a picture of where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
But that was on a personal, even spiritual level, that was the impetus for it. Return to centre, mm-hmm. being having a some sort of spiritual connotation as well. But then the process, as you alluded to, was that I, you know, my previous record, Bravado, I'd taken on and off 3 years to make, thrown everything at it, wrote so many songs, didn't make it. It you know, they basically, it took a long time and a lot of work, and that's interesting in itself, but, you know, you could work forever. So I wanted to set some clear guidelines for this one. So it was about, basically, I had a timeline and a budget and a palette, and also by using covers, there's only so much you can interpret the songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the Guitar Center, which is the biggest music store in the world, the most corporate generic music store in the world. There's over 200 Guitar Center locations across North America.
But, amazing.
And they're sort of derided, you know, that it's not a music store with a lot of heart necessarily, but I mean, I love Guitar Center, truly.
They do a very important job of providing music to the masses.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you need something, you go to Guitar Center.
Exactly.
But anyway, so I did need something, so I did go to Guitar
you
Center.
You needed quite a lot of things,
I needed
actually.
Quite a lot of things. I basically spent the whole album budget in Guitar Center on that one day, and then that night we set it all up in my garage. And the next morning we started recording, and we had the length of the return policy, which was 2 weeks on Pro Audio gear, two weeks to make the album before packing everything back down in the boxes, all the tags still hanging off the heads of guitars and stickers on the drums and
everyone
et
very gently putting them back in there.
100%, 100%.
No scratches.
And then we returned to centre and
did you get a refund?
Yeah,
to try to get the money back. Yeah. That was the idea, I guess, as well, is to show some ingenuity. And, you know, there's no money in music. You used to tour to support your record, so you could sell your record. But now you make records to support your tour. But touring costs a lot of money.
Yep.
So it's sort of like the money's dried up. So that was also, I guess, part of the commentary in the album was making it on someone else's dime, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I returned to centre with all the gear and didn't know whether they were going to take it back or not. But,
yeah.
And, you know, to be fair, I got a bit attached to some of the stuff.
Yeah,
I can imagine. You'd be like, this one's a nice guitar.
No, but it wasn't the guitars I got attached to. It was like the speakers, you know? Which maybe is because they were the things I was listening to the record, or the microphone I did my vocals on as well.
So you got it refunded?
We got the money back.
So brilliant equipment is in the shop. You could go there and buy it.
And, you know, I don't think Guitar Center are particularly happy about it.
But look, this is almost like huge free advertising for Guitar Center.
This is what I'm thinking. There's a duality with this. One, on one hand, you could say, you know, this is a punk record and he's fucked over this corporation kind of thing. But I tend to think it's more, if anything... And it's, you know, there's
it's a bit of a handshake, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? I mean, I didn't write the return policy. They wrote it. Yeah. I'm playing by the rules. Yeah.
I don't think...
You're gaming the system.
I think they'd be stoked.
Well, they're not. Well, I would be. But, but I saw it as, you know, I made a beautiful record using only gear available at their store and, you know, using their branding in my artwork and everything, and, mm-hmm. and it's a big part of the story. So it's, in a way, it's a celebration not just of Guitar Center, but... consumerism and capitalism as a whole.
Hey, beautiful. We love that.
Kind of beautiful. But also a bit insidious.
It's like the sort of nice kind of gold finish on the...
Yeah, I wanted it to look very corporate, you know, and I think the artwork, for anyone that's seen it, it does evoke... It looks very branded. And also going for a bit like Barry White's Greatest Hits kind of...
These are all fantastic references. I feel like if people haven't listened to it, but I know a lot of BFM listeners definitely will have already wrapped their ears around this, I hope this is painting a beautiful picture in their minds of what this could be like.
I hope so too.
I do think it's interesting what you were saying about you were hoping people wouldn't know it was a covers album, or you kind of didn't want it to be thought of as a covers album, mm-hmm. because there seems to be a stigma that that's mm-hmm. somehow like musically less impressive or something. But mm-hmm. I think it's just so much... more impressive when you hear a cover of a song mm-hmm. that just takes it beyond what you originally heard of. It's not trying to just ape the original song, but it's trying to, I guess, pay homage to tracks. That seems to be the impetus behind this.
100%. I mean, for me, this idea that it's less, somehow lesser, purely comes from that question. It's like, oh, do you play originals or covers?
Yeah.
You know? And
there's so many
now
layers.
It's like, now the answer is covers, actually. that's the other thing for me. I'd never really done covers before. I had one Go-Betweens cover on my first ever 7-inch, but otherwise I'd never done any covers. I don't really know. I'm not that sort of musician that can pick up a guitar and play any song. You know, largely writing my own songs came from a need to write the songs in order, you know, to play them. But that was a part of it, I suppose, as well. What else? There was something I thought of that I wanted to, a little anecdote, but it's too early still. It'll come back as I drink this coffee.
You worked with some incredible musos on this album. Did that sort of come together naturally? Did you just sort of ring your mates and say, hey, I've got this idea, do you want to be involved?
I've been living in LA for a while now, and that's the sort of, it's, you know, high caliber of musicians living and working over there. So in a way it was just ringing my mates and saying, mm-hmm. That's definitely how it came about. But also, to make an album in 2 weeks, I needed top players. You know,
totally.
We couldn't be fumbling around how to work out these songs. I would mention the song that I wanted to do sort of on a whim that morning.
Yep.
And half an hour later they could play it.
Wow, amazing. Yeah.
And, you know, and it was great players. I had Drew Erickson on keys, which he was between him and Benji Lasite, who notated everything out.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Erickson plays with Roger Waters, plays with Father John Misty, he's very good. And Benji plays with everyone from Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders to Brandon Flowers. And
yep.
So, you know, they're great players. And Stella on drums, Warpaint, and mm-hmm. Dave Ehrlich, Miley Cyrus, and Mars Volta. It was great players.
And also hugely interesting, like, different musical references within their canon as well.
Totally. Everyone sort of, a lot of them didn't know each other. Some of them knew each other very well. Others didn't know each other. And I was a bit of the pivot point in between, which is that was cool as well.
That's cool. Yeah. It's kind of like your own little community.
It was so fun, you know, and we made it all in my garage, which again, there was a return to center.
Yeah.
You know, the title sort of had this holistic thing with the album, obviously the return to Guitar Center, but you know, we all started making music in our garages.
Mm-hmm.
So for all of us, it was a bit of, you know, going to make, we had, it was so much fun. We had the roller door open for most of the recording, unless it was particularly loud or late at night. But it's just spilling out onto the street in, you know, suburban Los Angeles. It was great.
Totally. And it feels like a love letter in many ways, this album, because it kind of, it has that beautiful sense of heart at the middle of it. I think that's what I've really enjoyed listening to this, is just being like, these are songs that you love or that mean a lot to you, and that you've got a bunch of really incredible people to come together and in a really tight space of time, pump it out and make something that sounds really special as well. What is something that I guess sort of is tricky about making a cover? I guess we were saying it becomes your own song in its own ways. When you're performing them, do you feel like it's your own song when you're making it? Or do you still think, this is the Water Boys?
No, definitely not. You have to make it your own. And, you know, I've had varying degrees of success with that. It's not necessarily easy to do. But there's a few of them, like the Momus track, The Homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember how the original goes.
I found a few of these tracks. I'm like, how does the original sound again? And then you listen to it, you're like, okay, no, different, completely different songs now.
Some of them are completely reimagined. Others are pretty faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was both deliberate, and then also sometimes just down to the reality that we had to do a song a day.
Yeah,
you know, 10 songs. In 14 days, including overdubs and everything. It was essentially every song was a song a day with the band. So
were you doing like 13, 14 hour days? You churning
about 13 hour days. I think we start about 11 a.m. and go to about 1 o'clock. Yeah.
Nice. It's a lot of adrenaline pumping you through, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, and then I'd go back up to the house, but all the stuff set up in the garage, and I was quite paranoid that someone's going to break in and steal it all.
Can't return it to sender.
Yeah, exactly. I'd also bought a little security camera from Best Buy. Returned to Best Buy at the end. And then I'd sit up there and watch, and I could see on my phone what was going on in there. And I'd always get a notification in the morning because Travis, the engineer, would usually always be the first person to show up, and I'd wake up, there's movement in the studio, in the garage. But
like run down there, being what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. Hey, this is a fantastic record. We're going to play The Hole of the Moon, which is the Water Boys track, but it's actually, it's your track now, Karen.
I've taken it.
You've taken it. Yeah. You own it now. But it is an incredible album. I don't think maybe Ultravox and Pill have ever been on the same billing before, but, you know, I love it. It works fantastically. Everyone should head along to Galatos tonight and check it out. It's going to be a really great show. You excited for the rest of the tour around New Zealand too?
Yeah. You know, I've been doing this tour solo, and so I did a big 5-week North American tour and a 3-week European tour, and I've just come off a 2-week Australian tour, and this is the final run for a minute. And it's weird because I'm playing solo with backing track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think that maybe the shows would be fairly monotonous, but they're actually, I was telling Johnny, he was asking on the way here, Johnny's sitting right behind me.
Johnny's in the manager's chair.
He was asking how the show has been, and they're bizarrely all really different. They take on their own atmosphere.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they all move, in some more than others, into these territories of, like, really unknown worlds. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, a lot of weird things happening. You know, in Brisbane the other night, somehow I ended up on the floor in the venue as, you know, 500-600 people, however many were at the show, were crowding around me and sort of formed these queues where they would just come up and kiss me, and the whole venue would kiss me, but not like making out with me, just little very respectful pecks, starting on the head and cheeks, and then sort on the neck and down my body and all my legs and feet, and and so the whole venue were pecking at me like chickens going for seed, you know, as I was singing a song.
Control. And
it was interesting. I was interested.
That's the first time that's happened?
Yeah, that's first and last time that's happened.
There you go. It's been out on the radio now, so who knows what could happen at Galatos.
Happen tonight we'll at Galatos. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much, Karen J. Callanan, for coming and speaking to us this morning.
My pleasure.
Return to Centre is the album. Galatos is the venue tonight. This is The Hole of the Moon.
I pick night you saw the plan. I wandered out in the world for years, while you just stayed in your room. I saw the crescent, you saw the whole of the moon, the whole of the moon.
Kieran J. Callanan, The Whole of the Moon. Thank you so much to Kieran for coming and speaking to us this morning. What a pleasure. You can catch him tonight at Galatos. You can also, if you're listening from Wellington, catch him on the 23rd, and that's at San Fran, or at Starters Bar in Dunedin on the 24th, and Blue Smoke in Christchurch on the 25th. Certainly sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.